Welcome to the 73rd edition of the Gooner podcast, recorded immediately after our previous one on the Monday after Arsenal's visit to Stoke. Thanks as ever to our sponsors, GoonerShirts.com, the website for all your quality cult Arsenal t-shirts. I'm your host, Don Sebastiano, and still with us are Steve Ashford and Mark Ollington, although there's been a bit of a rotation taking place for a variety, so we've been joined by none other than Gooner editor himself, Kev Witcher.
Good evening.
Right, let's move straight on to business, and the business of Jack Wilshere and his decision to go to the European Under-21 Championships. How do we feel about that? Kev?
I think he probably will suffer. I think a point was made about Ryan Giggs the other day from one pundit whose name escapes me. It might have even been Mark Lawrenson, actually, but the guy's never done a major championship in his career, and he's still going strong at 37, and you got to wonder if there might be something in that. So I can understand a player wanting to go. I can understand Stuart Pearce wanting to pick him. I don't really buy into the argument that he needs to experience the boredom of being away at a major tournament to be better in future ones. It's just a fact of life that players get bored when they're away from home for 3 weeks, whatever they're doing, and that's not going to change, however old you are. You've just got to deal with it. You don't need practice at it. So I personally would be happier if he didn't go, but it's going to happen, and both England and Arsenal will pay the consequences. I think he's already running out of steam a little bit this season.
Although he's
aggressive still and tigerish and committed, I think his actual quality of play has dropped a little over the last 6 weeks because I think he has run out of steam, and no one can blame him for that because, you know, I mean, how many full seasons has he played before this one? You know, zero.
Mark, what do you think about the fact that he's already played for England? Is it also a bit of a step down to start then playing for the under-21s? It seems like a bit of a strange move in a way.
Totally, and people keep harking back to this German team that apparently had loads of players playing for them, then stepped up to the national team, but they didn't play 50 games AM season. So that's the thing people haven't realised. I hope what Wenger does do is make it give Wilshere the first 2 months off in the season, the first month off, so Wilshere can't then play for the England proper team when it comes to the qualifiers. And that would teach the manager, won't it? And say, hey, you pick my player, but you can't play for the proper team. Piss off. I think it's an absolute farce. I can see Pearce's point. Look at Walcott. You know, Walcott's not half a player of Wilshere, but it did him no favours whatsoever going to this kind of tournament. And actually, Walcott had a stinker of a tournament anyway.
It is.
And didn't even play well.
It is.
So, the whole thing is just a big joke to me. Not much to add other than that, really.
Yeah, Steve.
Well, I think it's more about Stuart Pearce than it is about Jack Wilshere. Stuart Pearce, I've never rated Stuart Pearce as a manager at all. I think he's incredibly fortunate to be in the job that he is. And I think he needs all the good players he can get to keep Stuart Pearce in a job. I always thought the under-21 team was a stepping stone to getting into the full England side. Wilshere and Andy Carroll are already in the full side. Why on earth pick them for the under-21s, other than just to massage Stuart Pearce's ego? And I think Arsenal will suffer because we'll be without our best player for the first 6 weeks of the new season. England will suffer because he'll miss those qualifiers, as it's just been pointed out. And, you know, I just think the whole thing, as Mark said, is a total farce.
And so you agree with Arsene Wenger on one thing, at least then, Steve?
I agree with Wenger on that, yeah. But I think he should push it. You know, yeah. he'll capitulate, he should push it.
Yeah, OK. Moving on, ownership. Thoughts on the departed Danny Fisman, Kevin?
Well, I mean, in fairness to Danny Fisman, he took the club to another level. There is obviously a thought that it might be a level we don't actually want to be at, but football today is about money. And ultimately, much as we may be frustrated by the lack of trophies, we would not be paying the wages we are if we were still at Highbury. And if you think what we're getting for what we're paying now, imagine what we might be getting if we were still at Highbury. So, you know, I think it's generally accepted that much as no one wanted to leave the old stadium, that the prevailing climate demanded that we did. Look how many other clubs are trying to do what Arsenal are doing and failing, specifically Liverpool and Tottenham. And Fisman was a huge part of that. Now, you know, I don't want to make him out to be a saint, because the one thing that it also affected was increasing the value of his shareholding phenomenally. So ultimately, he didn't do it for nothing. But in fairness to the guy, and I'm not going to speak ill of the dead, without him, the club would not have moved to the level it needs to be at for a healthy future. And credit to him for working damn hard to achieve that. And, you know, if there's one individual who you could say is responsible for moving the club forward, possibly in a funny kind of way, more so than the manager, I think it probably was Danny Fisman. So
didn't Ken Fryer have a lot to do with that, though?
Well, he did, but, you know, it was Fisman who had the bollocks in the decision making process.
So wouldn't you say also there's a lot to be said for, before the, all that, the foundations being laid down by David Dean as well, did quite a lot of moving and shaking, or is that on a different level?
It is on a different level, because what David Dean achieved was on the football level. What Fisman realised quite quickly was that commercially Arsenal were lagging behind phenomenally. Now, none of us like the middle tier at the new stadium, the club level, the corporate boxes, but the fact is they actually do gain a ridiculous amount of revenue for the club. And it's what every other team in the world aspires to do. And I doubt there's another team in the world that's making as much money from what you call the posh seats as Arsenal, which hopefully in the long run will be of benefit to the team.
Well, we get a manager who's prepared to spend the profits that we're making.
Absolutely.
Well, I saw recently in some sort of table in one of the Sundays that we're actually the third richest club in the world.
Yeah.
Above Bayern Munich, Chelsea, and so we're just...
Well, that's largely down to the property aspect of Arsenal, which is a temporary thing. In a sense, that is making up for the massive detriment we have on sponsorship deals. Because what's happened as a result of a long-term deal signed to get the new stadium built is that we are seeing every year the amount of money we take from those deals lag behind. I mean, what Liverpool get in a year from their sponsors? Is it 25 million or something?
Is it really good?
I don't know, it's something ridiculous. But Arsenal are getting about 5 million for the same. So basically the property money is making up for that lack of sponsorship. Once the property goes, then it'll be more of an even keel, because by that time we'll renegotiate new deals with new sponsors and hopefully be getting our actual market value.
When you pay off the loan, sorry, Kev, you're into these things, especially with your new book, I imagine, that's coming out soon with the extra chapters. But when does the loan actually get paid off?
I think it's 18 years after the stadium moves, so
12, 13 years left.
Something like 2025.
See, I thought it was more.
That's the mortgage. That's the mortgage on the stadium.
Yes, but the mortgage is highly manageable. It's 18 million a year, including the interest payments.
So that's six home games.
Yes.
So once we've had six home games, we're debt free per season.
Yes.
So all the income from the fans for the tickets, the gate money receipts, the merchandise receipt, the food receipts, the drink receipts. The Champions League receipts.
The constant stream of corporate events they have at that stadium every day of the week, from GCSE exams to flipping parties.
So after six home games, all that money's ours in future.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom,
unbelievable is that?
The bottom line is, you know, if we're earning, let's say, 200 million, we're paying about 110 million of that in wages to the players. We're paying about 18 million to pay off for the stadium. We have this thing which I've always been intrigued by called other operating expenses, which is 50 million plus. And
what's one big gift for, wasn't it?
It's exactly that. And I'm sure there is scope for shenanigans there, but we'll never know.
That's one expensive coach they take to away games.
Well, apparently the players do get seven-star treatment. So when they fly to a game abroad, they're on planes with all seats which can recline completely as beds and this sort of thing. They stay in the very best hotels. Now, what I'd like to see is them go to Eastern Europe, stay in a goddamn hotel with cockroaches and learn about a concept I call adversity, because that builds character. You pamper these players, you're going to get performances like you get at Stoke. You make them less comfortable and less sure of themselves, and actually give them some kind of a challenge, and you get more from people.
Make them eat cockroaches is what you're saying.
Too bloody right.
Yeah, I agree with that. Seven-star treatment.
That is what the manager insists
on. But we pay for that.
The fans, your season ticket rise is just a very small part of that bill.
I've heard that Arsenal do treat their players better than any other club in the country.
I think they treat them too well. Yeah, I think they're spoiled and pampered, and that shows on the against Stoke.
Yeah.
Bit of a windy day. Don't like it.
Well, it's strange they can't afford a hairdresser for Alex Song, though, isn't it?
Well, yeah. His wife has his hair too, isn't she?
And very briefly, while we're on the matter, what do we think of Giroud's Gunnosaurus Rex haircut?
Is it a tribute to Freddie Ljungberg? I mean, what is it?
There's only one Ljungberg, Kevin. Giroud, as much as I embrace his early season performances, he is not the man.
And on a footballing level, why didn't he just clear the ball when we got goal back with 10 minutes to go? We're in a position to come back, maybe eke a draw out of it against Stoke City. And he would not clear the ball. I know it's a couple of weeks back now, probably, if you're listening to this.
Opportunity presented itself to the team. Now, you know what our players do when that exists. The chance to do something.
Yeah.
Go to pieces.
Absolutely frustrating. Very briefly, there's a question here about the presence of Gunnosaurus in the centre circle for the minute silence for the tribute to Danny Fisman and the Hillsborough victims. What do you think of that, Mark Ollington, that they put Gunnosaurus on the centre circle?
Without bigging up our esteemed editor, he wrote an article after the day. At the time I noticed it, I thought, this is just bonkers. You know, there you've got a real sad moment. The Liverpool fans are there, quite happy with Mark in their time as well as Hillsborough, as well as just passing the Fisman. And it really is a somber occasion, impeccably observed silence by the whole stadium. You know, really, you know, nice moment with regards to that. And then you've got some idiot in a costume of a dinosaur stood there with the young players. We used to be a club that stood for class, that stood for tradition, that stood for all the good things in football, which Kel actually put in his article. And you were spot on, mate, because seriously, it was disgusting. And that sums up how far we've fallen as a football
club. Is that maybe just a reflection of Britain today as well, actually?
I've got that view for myself.
All right, what do you think about it?
Well, I mean, Gunnosaurus is a person, isn't there? Is a human being underneath that Gunnosaurus kit.
Oh, you're a knobber.
Right? what on earth is wrong with Gunnosaurus standing there joining in the minute silence? So, I can't see the problem.
So, Steve, say something a good friend dies. You go to their funeral.
Yeah.
Would you really go dressed up as a flipping dinosaur?
But it wasn't a funeral, it was a minute silence.
It was to observe the memory of the event.
Yeah, but Gunnosaurus was on the pitch anyway, wasn't he?
I will
intervene here.
Thank you.
Okay, then let me just say that I was actually phoned by someone who knows the guy who wears the costume, who was quite upset at the criticism. Now, his
version of
events was that he was actually at the side and Theo Walcott called him over to join. Well, if you're taking lessons in decorum from a 21-year-old, you've got problems.
You can't read the game.
You know, I mean, in fairness, having said that, it's not the first time. It happened when the Rowcastle death silence in 2001, when we played Spurs. I think he was also there in the centre circle.
But
so he's got form.
What's
appropriate? He's wearing a fucking 7-foot dinosaur costume. Do you know what I'm saying? It doesn't gel well with the idea of paying respect to the dead.
Whether or not he's wearing a fucking dinosaur costume.
Look, I don't mind the guy dressing up in civvies and joining the guys in the centre circle if it meant that much to him. But just take the fucking costume.
At least take the head off.
The costume has a big grin on his face.
If you had a clown's funeral and you had like 20 clowns all turning up,
you could argue that was appropriate.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be any less respectful.
But it wasn't the death of a clown, was it? 93 people got
I think we're almost in Steve winding up mode.
Right, and this is the point where I, as host, will stand in and say we move on to the next question, which is the naming of the two bridges. There are bridges that have been named after directors. Kev, can you fill us in and tell us who these direct? I know nothing of this. And is that a good thing afterwards, Steve and Mark?
Well, I can tell you that the North Bank Bridge has been renamed the Ken Fryer Bridge. And the Clock End Bridge has been renamed the Danny Fisman Bridge. Now, as far as I'm concerned, you think of Sir Matt Busby Way at Old Trafford, and you can see there's a certain evocative nature to that idea. What I can't see is the real gain of naming a bridge. And I'm talking about what Arsenal are now concerned about, which is marketing the club. So you're naming a bridge after these directors. Now, what do these names mean to your Japanese tourists, for example? In fact, what do they mean to anyone, really? I mean, in all fairness to these directors, they've done a great job. But Herbert Chapman Bridge, would that not sound a little bit more kind of Arsenal?
Oh, I totally agree with you.
I think there may be a point, though, that Fisman and Fryer were both at Highbury for years as well.
But,
and there's a certain kind of...
Herbert Chapman.
And didn't they take us to this new stadium?
Well, I understand the reasoning.
Chapman didn't take us to the new
stadium. I understand the reasoning. What I'm questioning is the wisdom of the decision. And I think they could have done so much more.
With the Henry Norris Bridge, maybe?
Well, I mean, he's certainly as relevant in Arsenal's history as Fryer and Fisman.
Well, personally, I think... I mean, if you wanted to find a thing that sums up the club as it is now more than anything else, it's naming those two bridges after directors that made a fortune when the club was sold to Kroenke. Fisman made an absolute fortune. His shares must have gone up from 500 quid to 11,000 in 15 years per share. Same with Fryer. I mean, the club is all about making money and a balance sheet, not about winning trophies. Mm. Now, you could have named, as Kev said, you could have named that Herbert Chapman Bridge, you could have named it Dennis Bergkamp Bridge, Thierry Henry Bridge, Ian Wright Bridge. You name it after two directors that have made a fortune selling their shares.
Cliff Bastin Bridge.
And it's not about winning trophies, it's about the balance sheet. And naming those two bridges after Fisman and Fryer sums that up.
Well, we are becoming less of a football club and more of a commercial entity. I mean, but isn't that a reflection of the way the world's going?
Can you imagine United naming their bridges like the...
Duncan, what was the chairman? Martin Edwards.
The Martin Edwards Way. Or David Gill Way or whatever. You can never see it. David Gill Way.
That's what's happened.
Peter Kenyon Bridge.
Having said that, they're only bridges, and what is wonderful is all those players around the stadium.
No, but it's the same as Old Trafford is the theatre of dreams.
Yeah.
You can buy into that concept, right?
Yeah.
We've got the Emirates.
We used to have the home of football.
Yeah, we did once.
We used to, back in the old days, Basti. Yeah. And I was when I was going for a piss in the Nina Bracewell Smith toilet, I thought exactly the same thing.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm glad to say that on European nights, as I've mentioned before, it is called Arsenal Stadium, and the word Emirates is banned from the inside of the stadium. So ultimately, really, in the real world, deep down, it is Arsenal's stadium.
We can't have it both ways. Not 5 minutes ago, we were bemoaning the fact that we're not making enough money in sponsorship. Yeah. We need to renegotiate our sponsorship.
But that doesn't stop fans and even journalists and people using the word Arsenal instead of Emirates.
One of the main areas and routes to sponsorship revenue would be the name of the stadium. So we can't have it both ways. We can't say, oh, we want to make millions of pounds in sponsorship so we don't have to fleece the fans, but we want to call the stadium Arsenal Stadium.
Well, I would say, yes, you're right. However, what you can do is you can, on a corporate level, call it Emirates Stadium, do all that stuff. But the fans, and also journalists, I mean, would someone who writes about the stadium in The Guardian or in The Times have to suddenly call... They could call it Arsenal Stadium. It's not illegal to do so, is it?
No,
so you could, just on a normal street level, call it Arsenal Stadium. If we all refer it to it as that, it doesn't matter what that lot call it, huppity-puppity people.
If a sponsor paid, let's just say for argument's sake, 100 million to sponsor the stadium name, and every newspaper was calling it Arsenal Stadium, they would be getting some very irate letters from the sponsor.
Well, they would, but there's nothing you can do about it because a journalist's allowed to write what they like. They're not paying you or the journalist so you can call it what you like. If you want to call it Arsenal Stadium, feel free to do so. I do so on Champions League nights, and I do so on every other night. I do fall into the Emirates trap occasionally, but I do try and avoid it. And the Ashburton Grove thing seems to have left a little now, but I think there's nothing wrong with good old-fashioned Arsenal Stadium. Kev?
The problem you've got, Basti, sorry, Kev, to interrupt very quickly, is that the general makeup of the Arsenal fan is different. We've got a lot of corporate fans, there are a lot of new fans. They are not in the mindset of doing what Man City supporters did and renaming their own stadium. They called it Eastland straight away. The City of Manchester Stadium, whatever it was called. The fans pretty much called it what they wanted to and call it. Our supporters, quite new in that stadium, half of them are corporates. To them, they're quite happy to call it Emirates Stadium. And that's what happens when you take
so
the
So you're saying
dollar.
Half of Arsenal supporters are complete twats, is that
pretty,
what you're saying?
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but I'll go then what I call new football fans, is they would come to games late, leave games early, and they're very, very happy to call it Emirates Stadium. And that's the sad thing. When you take the corporate dollar, take the corporate money, move to a bigger stadium, that's what happens. That's the makeup of our support.
Kev?
I mean, in fairness, quite a few of the longer and more well-established fans also are perfectly happy to call it the Emirates.
Including me. No, I always call it the Emirates.
And it's a habit thing. And, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the club has sold its soul. They could have named the stadium the Emirates Arsenal Stadium or the Emirates Highbury Stadium or some variation which incorporated some Arsenal thing. So there wasn't a great deal of imagination there, and we've kind of ballsed up on that one. And, I mean, it's just something we will learn to live with, and it's going to be bloody weird in 2021 when the sponsorship ends if the naming rights are not renewed, because then we're going to be calling it something else, and that's going to be quite...
Well, which is why I maintain it is Arsenal Stadium, because underneath it all, the bottom of the line is Arsenal Football Club play there. Now, we've only got a few minutes left, so very quickly, we're going to save the rest... Oh, I see. Right, that was... I was just handed a very secretive sheet that I'm not meant to say anything about. But I will just very quickly...
Dave, please come back quickly. You're all professional.
Just very quickly, I'm just going to ask you, who is going down and who do you want to go down? And we've got a lovely choice of West Ham, Wigan, Blackpool, Wolves, Birmingham and Blackburn. Mark...
Blackpool, because I hate the fact that everyone makes out they're such a brilliant team and great for the Premiership. Oh, isn't that other fella really nice? No, you wind me up. West Ham, definitely. I hate West Ham. And Birmingham, because they beat us the Carling Cup final.
Okay, well, that's... right. Steve?
Well, can I just talk about Wigan, basically? Wigan have got three players, Rodallega, Nzobbia, and... the other one whose name escapes me now, and I sound really stupid, but they've got three players at Wigan who I would love playing for Arsenal. I wouldn't like Wigan to go down.
Ooh,
they're too good.
Cheeky monkey.
They're too good. They're just too good. And before the end of the podcast, I'll think of the third player.
Right, okay, Kev.
The teams I would like to go down are definitely Birmingham. I think Wigan have had their time, in fairness to them. And I mean, if I had the choice, Blackburn, but it's not going to happen. Mm. I mean, I don't want West Ham to be relegated. Certainly don't want Blackpool to be relegated.
We all want Birmingham to go down, don't we?
I think that's unanimous.
We all want Birmingham to go down, not least for when that arsehole, that arsehole slapped Koscielny on the back of the face, which very little was said about on the back of the head. Yeah. Did anyone see that?
Yeah.
And well, he just gave him this mass almighty crack on the back of the head. Nothing was said.
Yeah.
If that had been any other team, I mean, sorry, but do we get some bad decisions against it? Or people seem to ignore when we get a rub of the green. I'm sounding a bit like Wenger here. Just very briefly, Birmingham...
Player, the other Wigan player, by the way, Remy Moses.
Remy
Moses. Oh, the other one.
Remy Garth.
Moses. What's his name?
Remy Martin.
No, the Wigan player called Moses.
Or just Moses.
Just call him Moses.
Moses.
Okay, I would like
him instead of Walcott any day.
I would like Birmingham, and Birmingham to go down. I'd like them to go down three times because I really dislike Birmingham. No, I don't mind the others. And West Ham, I've got to say, was my first ever away game with Arsenal, and it was with my mum and dad, the only game we all three went together.
Victor Moses.
Well done, Steve.
Victor Moses.
I tell you what, some people were not going to get to sleep tonight because of that. Right, so it's time to wrap up this edition. The email address for any communications about the podcast is GoonaPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks once again to our sponsors, GoonaShirts.com. We'll be back with one more offering from this particular recording session very soon. For now, though, my thanks to the panel. This is your host, Don Sebastiano, saying farewell to one and all.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends enjoy the company. Well, hey!